Now, growth hormone can be a very confusing hormonal system, and because of that, we're starting off with this generalized figure right here. Now, we have this general figure here to try and separate the fact that growth hormone is both an anabolic hormone and a stress hormone. And you have to keep the anabolic actions of growth hormone and the stress actions of growth hormone separate. Now, being very careful here, if we consider the acute actions of growth hormone, the acute actions of growth hormone are consistent with the stress actions of growth hormone, and these stress actions are mainly the direct actions of growth hormone. So just to repeat that, if you're looking at the acute actions of growth hormone, the acute actions of growth hormone are mainly the stress actions, and these are most of the direct actions of growth hormone. Now, there are two direct stress or catabolic actions of growth hormone. The first listed here is that growth hormone decreases the uptake of glucose in peripheral tissues. Similar to cortisol then, growth hormone raises plasma glucose. So because it decreases the peripheral uptake of glucose, growth hormone raises plasma glucose. But more importantly, the second direct stress or catabolic action of growth hormone is that it mobilizes fats by increasing the activity of hormone-sensitive lipase. Growth hormone is considered a major fat-mobilizing hormone. And if you have a growth hormone deficiency, then body fat will increase. Now, if we consider the long-term effects of growth hormone, most of the long-term effects of growth hormone are consistent with the anabolic actions of growth hormone, and most of these are indirect actions of growth hormones. Just to repeat that then, the long-term or chronic effects of growth hormone are consistent with growth hormone as an anabolic hormone, and these are mainly the indirect actions of growth hormone. Now, there is one direct action of growth hormone, and that is growth hormone, like insulin, will increase the peripheral uptake of amino acids, and in doing so, then growth hormone makes amino acids more available for protein synthesis. Most of the anabolic actions of growth hormone are indirect, and they are mainly via the actions of growth factors. Now, there are several growth factors that we could consider here, but the one that's important for step one used to be referred to as somatomedancy. It is now called IGF-1. Now, IGF-1 is insulin-like growth factor 1. In the older literature, it was referred to as somatomedancy, but in the current literature, it's referred to IGF-1. IGF-1 is an important anabolic growth factor. Now, this is the sequence of its production and release. Growth hormone in the circulation will act on the liver and other tissues such as skeletal muscle to increase the production and the release into the circulation of these growth factors, especially IGF-1. Now, as I said earlier, IGF-1 is now considered a major anabolic growth factor. IGF-1 is a circulating peptide, but it does have a structure very similar to proinsulin. And because it has a structure very similar to insulin, it does have some insulin-like activity. There is something called non-suppressible insulin-like activity. They now think that this non-suppressible insulin-like activity is mainly due to IGF-1. Now, IGF-1, as I just said, is a peptide circulating growth factor. It's a water-soluble peptide. But for some reason, this peptide circulates in the blood very tightly bound to a large protein. And because it circulates bound to a protein, then it generally has a long half-life. One of the important clinical aspects of IGF-1 is that plasma IGF-1 does serve as a reflection of overall 24-hour growth hormone secretion. Now, the measurement of growth hormone secretion is difficult. If you take a plasma sample from a patient first thing in the morning, then you always find the plasma growth hormone level extremely low for two reasons. Growth hormone is released in pulses, like many other antipituitary hormones, but more importantly, the pulsatile release of growth hormone mainly occurs during the night. Therefore, first thing in the morning, you always find a very low plasma level of growth hormone. The plasma level of growth hormone is a very poor index of overall growth hormone secretion. You don't measure growth hormone, instead, you measure IGF-1. You need to remember that the plasma level of IGF-1 is a fairly good index of overall growth hormone secretion for two reasons. The release of IGF-1 into the circulation is dependent upon growth hormone. And number two, IGF-1 has a very long half-life. So at any point during the day, you simply take a plasma level and measure IGF-1. That plasma level at any point during the day is a relatively good index of overall growth hormone secretion. Now, in terms of the peripheral effects of IGF-1, they're not well understood, but what they will test on step one is the major known anabolic effect of IGF-1 is that it increases the synthesis of cartilage in the epiphyseal plates of long bones. Most of the anabolic actions of growth hormone on bone are indirect via IGF-1. That is the known anabolic effect of IGF-1, and that is the point they'll probably test on step one. Now, the last point here, as stated, is a hypothesis. It is also hypothesized that circulating IGFs then will increase lean body mass. Because this is only a hypothesis not agreed upon by many people, it probably will not be tested on the exam. Now, if we take a look at the control of growth hormone secretion, again, we have a problem here because you have to try and separate as best you can the long-term regulation that relates mainly to the anabolic actions of growth hormone versus the short-term regulation that relates mainly to the stress effects. Now, on this slide here, we have several points related to the control of growth hormone secretion, and the generalization is that most of these statements refer to the long-term anabolic actions of growth hormone. There's not a complete separation, but most of this refers to the anabolic long-term regulation of growth hormone. First of all, as stated earlier, the secretion of growth hormone is pulsatile, and most of these pulsations occur during the night. Now, more specifically, it is during stages 3 and 4 of sleep, not REM sleep, but that is probably a detail that would not be tested on step one. Now, the pulsatile release, now I'm not talking about the plasma levels, I'm talking about the pulsatile release of growth hormone. The pulsatile release, the pulses become more frequent as an individual enters puberty. Now, this information will build as we go through additional hormonal systems, but at this point, just remember that these additional pulses are facilitated by the pubertal increase in androgen secretion. A bottom line point is, once an individual enters puberty, it is the increase in androgen secretion that is driving the increased growth hormone secretion. Now, in males, they think it is the increased testosterone secretion at puberty, but in females, they think it is the increased androgen secretion at puberty. When a woman enters puberty, there is an increase in the secretion of adrenal androgens, and they think it is the increase in these adrenal androgens that is driving the increased growth hormone secretion then. Now, another point which we'll mention later on that kind of fits into the overall scheme here is that the secretion of growth hormone requires the presence. The actual secretion of growth hormone requires the presence of normal plasma levels of thyroid hormone. If an individual suffers from hypothyroidism, then the secretion of growth hormone will be depressed. Finally, step one does like aging questions, and you should remember during the sixth decade of life and thereafter, the secretion of growth hormone decreases in both men and women. The mechanism of this decrease is not really understood. This figure showing the control of growth hormone secretion mainly relates to the acute regulation of growth hormone. Now, the factors that promote growth hormone secretion are listed on the right here. The factors that inhibit growth hormone secretion are listed on the left. Now, except for the variables in boxes here, going through this figure, you should realize the factors listed here are almost identical to what we talked about with glucagon. And an important point is the acute regulation of growth hormone is very similar to the regulation of glucagon. We also mentioned earlier that if you enter a stressful situation, you can always count on an increase in both glucagon and growth hormone. As I just mentioned, in the acute state then, you can usually assume that the regulation of glucagon and growth hormone is almost identical. So we take a look at the factors that promote growth hormone secretion. One is hypoglycemia, same as glucagon. Exercise, that's the stress. Amino acids, the same as glucagon. And what inhibits growth hormone secretion is elevated plasma glucose. So the acute regulation of growth hormone is almost identical to the acute regulation of glucagon. Deep sleep makes this an exception, and IGF-1 is a negative feedback loop that makes it different than glucagon. But overall, they're almost the same. Now, in terms of the pathophysiology here, we are not going to deal with many details because most of the details will be discussed in pathology. If you have a deficiency in growth hormone pre-puberty, that will result in dwarfism. Now, pre-puberty, if you have normal growth hormone secretion, but a decreased IGF-1, that still results in dwarfism. This just underscores the point that most of the anabolic actions of growth hormone are due to IGF-1. Now, in an adult, a growth hormone deficiency is not a major problem, even if untreated, but it is a very treatable condition. A deficiency of growth hormone in an adult does not create major problems. Now, looking at hypersecretion, if the hypersecretion occurs before puberty, this, of course, results in giantism. If it occurs post-puberty, it results in a state called acromegaly. Now, we did put down some of the characteristics of acromegaly. It's worth reading through these. It's not an unimportant disorder, but most of the details will be presented in pathology.